FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. It's December 26th, 2017. You know what that means? Only five more days left of an amazing year. Amazing in so many ways for so many of you out there. And I think it's almost as if the country has woken up from a funk, a deep sleep. A real shroud or cloud has perhaps been lifted from the country. Hey, don't forget, get involved with the show. It's your show too. Email me, kl@carrielutz.com, or Twitter us at Carrie Lutz. So, question is, countries emerging from a deep sleep or a funk, whatever you want to call it, does the tax bill really help? Or is the tax bill just a PR stunt? Trump is so good at these PR stunts. Well, here to help clarify these issues and give you an understanding is our good friend Gerard Lomero, author, philosopher, economist, and author of More Good News or More Great News for America. Find Gerard at greatnewsforamerica.com. I should say that's his upcoming book. Gerard, welcome back. So what are your thoughts?
Well, it's great to be back with you. And I think that the malaise is over. The 8 years of malaise that we sat through, the recession that didn't want to end, I think is beginning to really thaw. And I think this tax bill is significant. I think it has given a shot in the arm to an economy that was already on the rise. I think it's going to further enhance GDP. Right now, we're looking at a revised GDP in the 3.2, 3.3 range and growing. Accelerating. I think that by the time we hit the elections next year, barring some catastrophic event that we're unable to predict accurately at this time, we're going to be looking at a GDP in the 4% plus range. And I think it's going to be a significant growth spurt. And I think Donald Trump is largely the author with the 4-point pro-growth policy. Change the taxes, change the spending, change the regulations, and make sure you got a decent monetary policy. He's working on them all. I don't think he's got everything exactly right, but I'll tell you, he's done a lot of right things, and I think he continues to improve.
Well, that's a mouthful. So where do we start? But I thought passing of the tax bill was Armageddon. It's the end of the end. I mean, this is what Nancy Pelosi would have you believe. Where is she wrong, Gerard?
Where is she right? Nowhere. She is really out to lunch. The folks do not understand economics. We've known that for a long time. Instead of being Armageddon, this is the beginning of a new growth spurt. It's a new era in which the economy is free. People feel freer. The corporations, seeing a drop from 35% down to 21%, are rethinking their strategies, rethinking their plans. A lot of them are giving out $1,000 bonuses, as you know, to hundreds of thousands of employees. A lot of companies are saying they will now raise their minimum wage for the lower rung jobs to 15 an hour. So you don't need to legislate 15 an hour if the companies feel like they can afford it and make money with it. They'll run with it on their own. So we're seeing even that tier getting a real boost. And you go through the limits, the different things, the Made in America innovation, R&D tax credit, for example, all sorts of things that eliminate incentives for corporations to move overseas, to move R&D overseas, to move headquarters overseas, to move jobs overseas. Those former incentives are being whittled away. So just across the board, there are just lots of opportunities for growth. And I think money in the pockets of in the hands of consumers and money in the treasuries of corporations allow them to invest. So we have a lot of reasons to see money going instead of to the federal government for wasteful programs that accomplish nothing, and we can name lots of them if you like.
Oh, sure.
But instead, the money is going back to the people. And in the private sector, I believe and have believed for a long time the velocity of money is a lot stronger.
All right. So let's look at this. You said a lot there. Two things I would question, not take issue with. I have my own personal belief about it. But number one, the stock market. So much of the psychological boost that we've seen in the country has to do with ever rising stock prices. And you know that, Gerard, from past experience, from history, this can be quite ephemeral. So what happens if the stock market takes a 40% hit? Is it still happy days are here again?
Well, let me tell you this. I think the cause and effect implied in your question is the other way around. People aren't thrilled because the stock market went up. The stock market went up because it's smart. And I always believe that people who invest in the stock market, even small-time investors, not just the big guys, but even just regular Main Street investors, are voting with their dollars because they see good things coming. In other words, they're voting with their dollars because they see stocks going up. And I think, sure, enthusiasm feeds on enthusiasm, but the reason for the stock market going up was because people saw what was going to happen. They believed Trump was going to accomplish some of the things he set out to accomplish. And he is, going right ahead with his agenda, more so than most politicians do. So I think it's going in the forward direction. Now, what's going to happen if there's a crash? I don't think you're going to see a big correction anytime soon. Now, can it happen? Yeah, there are certain things that can happen that could generate a correction. But I think if there is a correction, I think it'll be a short and small correction, and it'll keep growing after that.
Okay, now I'm
bullish on the situation.
All right. So let's look at AT&T, because you held them out as an example. Their net income in 2016 was $13.333 billion. Okay? They paid approximately $6.5 billion in taxes. They paid at one of the highest rates, effective rates, of any publicly traded corporation out there. Now, presumably, they're going to save approximately 40% on their taxes. Right? 40% of $6.5 billion is almost $3 billion they're going to save in taxes. They have 100,000 employees. They're giving $1,000 each to 150,000. Actually, 200,000. I take it back. My mistake. 200,000.
Yeah.
So they're giving out a whopping $200 million of $3.5 billion or $3 billion that they're going to be saving. Is that really meaningful here? I mean, they're just giving them crumbs, aren't they?
Well, I'll tell you, the 200,000 people who are getting an extra $1,000, it's money in the bank. They can go spend it, put it on a down payment on a new car, buy a refrigerator, something like that. But let me also add something you might have kind of went by quickly, and that is the fact that AT&T also announced that they would invest $1 billion extra in the American economy in 2018. Now, that billion is a little more substantial than the $200 million in bonus. It's substantial, and it'll have an impact. It's going to create jobs. It's going to create a lot of spinoff money. Because, again, I think the velocity of money in the private sector is much higher than in the public sector. And we're going to see a lot of benefits from just that alone. And there are quite a few others. Comcast has announced $50 billion investment over a longer period of time, not just 1 year. But $50 billion is $50 billion. You know, remember Senator Durbin years ago used to say billion here and a billion there, and sooner or later it adds up to a lot of money.
Yeah, pretty soon you're talking about real money. I'm playing devil's advocate here to some extent, but and let's not forget, AT&T is attempting to acquire Time Warner Cable, which just happens to own CNN and just happens to be in the midst of an antitrust action with the Trump administration. And the action itself, I hate CNN for a lot of reasons, having nothing to do with Trump. But the fact of the matter is, they're just trying to curry favor with the administration, throwing a crumb to their employees, and they have a right to do whatever they want. Basically, the Trump Justice Department said to them, hey, you can buy Time Warner, just get rid of CNN. And they had a meltdown over this. My point is, look, when you're making an extra $2.5 billion, $3 billion, give them $2,500. I mean, it's not my business what they do with the money. But if they went and then bought back shares, isn't that an abuse of the whole thing, Gerard?
Well, I'll tell you, if these are the only folks who did it. This was the only corporation that made this kind of announcement. We could say that it was political, and it might have been motivated to help get a more favorable reading on something from the federal government. You mentioned a merger, potential merger. I would say that this is characteristic of the size and scope of what corporate boardrooms are saying is appropriate given the tax cut. Now, you don't spend all your money when you get a windfall. I mean, some people do, and that's why they don't hold on to their money very long in that. But what they've done is take a reasonable amount of money where they can have a reasonable impact, make a statement of it to their employees and to their stakeholders, and they're doing that. And I do not think it's out of line with what other corporate boards are doing. And I think they're going to continue. We're going to see this going on, this tax cut effect, for the next 6 months. And I think we're going to continue to see these kinds at these levels, this scope, these amounts are very reasonable. And I think we should expect this kind of, you know, we should expect this from these corporate boards.
Hey, and I'm all in favor of it. Don't get me wrong.
No, I'm not.
They should be getting it. I just think, hey, and let's not forget, a guy who's making, let's say, $50,000 a year, is going to pull in another $2,000 to $3,000 a year as a result of this tax cut. So between the tax cut and his $1,000 bonus, just assume it was $50,000. I think it's going up to $150,000. I think for AT&T, but
right,
that could potentially be $3,000 to $5,000 more for somebody who's making $50,000. That's meaningful, and I do believe
that's 5 or 6%. Or 6% of their gross.
Yeah. So, you know, there's 13 companies that pay the highest effective tax rate in the U.S. And it's not whom you might think it might be. Number 13 is a company called Technip FMC. I think they make truck parts and stuff. Their effective tax rate is 40.7%. Quintiles, IMS Holdings, I have no idea what the hell they are. The Williams companies, I think they used to make pinball machines. Now they're in insurance, energy, pipelines, 41.6%. Nordstrom's. This is like a great poster child for this tax cut, Gerard. Do you know what their effective tax rate is?
I do not know that.
Yeah, I know you didn't, because I just looked it up. I didn't know it before I looked it up a couple days ago. 41.6%.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So they're paying more. You know, I don't know what Washington State's tax rate is. Kinder Morgan, I do know that's an energy producer, 41.6%. Aetna, all right, we all know who Aetna is, right? They come in,
right?
They come in on the scales here, number 8, 42.1%, and they're moving out of Connecticut for good reason, because Connecticut hates people that make money. It's going to be big money for these companies, because some of them, it's going to result in a 50% cut. Some of these are combined state and local, so you don't really know, and federal. Anthem, all right, not one of my favorite companies, health insurer, 42.1. Let's just go to the highest of the high. Amazon, who you would think would have every tax base covered, Gerard, you would be wrong in thinking that. Their effective tax rate's 45.6%. Let's just go to the number one, Johnson Controls. That is a Rust Belt company. They make stuff. They actually make stuff. Get a load of this tax rate, 47.9%. So for these companies, it's great. For Apple, Google, and Facebook and whomever, they're not paying much in taxes at all. For GE, this could result in a big tax increase for them, because, you know, Gerard, since I've been alive, since I've walked the planet, I probably paid more federal income tax than GE, right? So they could,
well,
they could use it.
They're pretty famous.
But I'm actually in favor of complete elimination of the corporate income tax, because it costs these companies billions and billions of dollars to come up with it. The shareholders actually pay it, and the consumers actually pay it. What is the point of a corporate income tax? It's really, if we had no corporate income tax, do you know how popular this country would be for new businesses, et cetera?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So in any event, hey, so there's a great article today, and I know you're a real Trump booster. Love his Twitter feed like I do. And the Boston Globe, which is known as the New York Times North, even though they don't own it anymore, was caterwauling about Trump's Twitter feed. And
right.
It was just a hysterical article. I mean, they were like, but it's not presidential, but he says things that upset people. What are we going to do here? I would postulate to you, Gerard, that had he not used his Twitter feed the way he did, he would have never become president.
Well, I'll go one step further. Back to my previous book that came out in January 2016, you know, with my 10 predictions for the presidential election, 9 of which came true, and just mentioned that one of those had to do with the media. And in historic presidential elections in American history, there's been about 7 of them, and that 2016 was one of them. We always had a change in the mainstream media. It always changed from the pamphlet to the newspaper, from the newspaper to the magazine and the urban press, television eventually. This was a change in the mainstream media. The mainstream media is no longer. I call it the old mainstream media. Their business model is broken. They're laying off people. People don't have credibility in the mainstream media. And instead, the new media, the social media, and talk radio has become the new dominant media in America. And Twitter is part of that. And Trump has adopted the new media just as other previous presidents in historic elections did the same thing. They adopted the new media and used it, exploited it, communicated to the American people with it. So we are seeing exactly what I predicted, and we're seeing it in a way that benefits the new president, as you would expect a new president to take advantage of whatever communication opportunities are out there for him. He's done it, and it's worked to his advantage. It's upset a lot of people, and I say, so what if it's upset people? It upset me once in a while too. But basically, he's accomplishing his objective.
I've never been upset. I think he got a little overboard in certain respects, and probably was sorry that he made certain tweets. But look, who doesn't say stupid things? I mean, every day I say something stupid, at least one thing. He's less than perfect. But the of all of the media approaches that he's used, by far the Twitter feed, most effective, because, you know, the average American's got the attention now, Gerard, of a tsetse fly. And really, 140 characters, now it's 280 characters because they upped it, really is about all most Americans can handle. So be it. But the idea that he might upset people, that North Korea is going to shoot off an ICBM because of his Twitter feed. Look, the man is a master brander. So when he looks at a Marco Rubio and calls him Little Marco and Lion Ted and Low Energy Jeb, you know, this is what the Democrats have always done. They've just basically defined your adversary before he can define you. And effectively, he was defining himself at the same time that he defined them. And that was what people really went for.
Yeah, absolutely. And how about Crooked Hillary? You know, that was a famous one, too.
I will never forget Crooked Hillary, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. So I actually, his Twitter has worked to his advantage. I think it's promoted his agenda. And I think he's systematically implementing his agenda, asking Congress to do certain things, challenging them to do other things, and doing an awful lot on his own through his administration. Presidential administration has a lot of power. They've got a lot of, if you will, pivot points that they can pivot around, and they're doing just that.
And they're doing it extremely effectively, better than anybody believed that it could ever be done. And, you know, what I love about the Twitter feed, Gerard, is your dislike of the old line, what I would call the legacy media, the mainstream media. It's totally altered the news cycle because they're no longer setting the terms. They wake up, you know, they've got somebody who's barely gotten over their hangover waking up at 4 a.m. to check out Trump's latest Twitter feed. And then it's like they go into the battle room. All right, you do this, you do that. Come on, we gotta get on this immediately or we're going to get out scooped by the other networks. And they don't know which way is up. I mean, this is really so much fun to watch. And, you know, they're basically his lapdogs, and he does what he wants with them, and they're powerless to resist.
Yeah. And by the way, speaking of Trump and his actions, take a look at the UN. They voted against him, regarding the Jerusalem decision. And here he is. He withdraws $285 million from their budget. Talk about taking quick action. He gave them a quick response and a definitive one. And then the folks who voted with the U.S. and that, they're invited to a cocktail party.
We've had this thing with the UN for a long time. I could never understand why my parents really hated the UN, UNICEF and all that when I was a kid.
Right.
And they hated it for a really simple reason that I didn't understand. It's that the UN was stoking the Palestine populace against Israel. Going back 50 years here, when they first came up with that orange box, Gerard, they've always been anti-U.S. and always mobilized the anti-Israeli sentiment. And that's why my parents hated them. Well, there's so many other reasons not to like the UN. We could just go down the list. It's just an international global kleptocracy that needs to be cut down to size, right?
So Trump took some action right away. I mean, they can feel that one in their pocketbooks, $285 million.
Yeah. Well, maybe now they'll be a little more careful with the money that they waste, right?
Yes, they're going to have to be. They've got less of it to waste because he just took a chunk out of their budget for next year.
Yeah, didn't he? Yeah, great thing. So, hey, your new book, tell us all about it.
More Great News for America, to take off on the previous book, Great News for America, that was a success in predicting a lot of things that happened. So the next book, More Great News for America, builds on that. And I answer a question that people have been asking me all over the country. So I decided partly to answer it in the book. I actually answer it in the book, but that's part of the reason for the book. And that is, why were the polls so wrong? And why were my models so right? Why was I able to predict almost every electoral vote that Trump carried, and other people, the polls, were wrong? And, I got an email the next morning after the election from one of the top polling firms in the country, and it was very short and sweet. They said, "You were right, we were wrong. Congratulations."
Yeah.
Hey. And so people ask me why. And so I wanted to give people information. So that's one thing in the book. That's the first part of the book. And then I go into the current trends that are shaping our political future for the next few years. I go into those trends because the trends help to build those models before, and they're helping to build the models now. And then I go into specific predictions that I make for the next few years politically. What's going to happen with one issue after another. So I go through some really interesting things. Why are the models so good? Why are the polls got problems? And what's going to happen in this country politically? And I go through a lot of that with some very specific predictions that I think people will be fascinated with. Even if they disagree with my predictions, I've got a great track record, but I don't hit everything right. So maybe they'll disagree with a few, but that's all right. I think it opens people's minds to the possibilities of what's going to happen.
And you will remember that we were also predicting the victory of Donald Trump almost from the very get-go. We were right on there with you. Unfortunately, I made the mistake of not writing a book about it, but I've got dozens of shows where I said he's going to win. I knew it.
Yeah.
I told you, I knew it. I realized it when I saw him at Freedom Fest, which is a libertarian get together. I'm a libertarian.
Right, right.
And, he was a last minute addition. Mark Skousen hated him, said he was a xenophobe. And yet 2,500 libertarians got to their feet and actually gave him a standing ovation that I had never seen anybody at this thing get. I knew it then, because I knew what people wanted wasn't ideology. What you wanted was leadership. And we haven't had leadership in this country going back to Ronald Reagan. None of these guys have been serious about being leaders. And it's distressing, but it's true.
Yeah, in the corporate world, you know, where I have done consulting in that, you know, I talk about the difference between leaders and managers. We had a lot of manager presidents who basically managed the administration, you know, that sort of thing. But they weren't really leading the country the way Donald Trump is.
Hey, and you know what they call that in the armed services? They call that management without leadership. If you don't lead your people, then you're not really doing an effective job of managing. People need to be led. And that doesn't mean, you know, bossed around and ordered around and screamed at, although I know for a fact that Trump does his share of that. But it isn't just about managing them through fear, because that doesn't work. You know it and I know it. You've been in enough corporations to know that fear of losing your job is not going to get people to do a good job. It takes a lot more than that. You have to provide vision, and you have to make people believe in themselves, and you have to have reasonable, obtainable goals. And that's the great thing. I knew the White House was straightening out when he appointed General Kelly to head up to be his chief of staff. It was a masterful stroke, and you know, it marks a turning point. Not so much in the administration, but in the perception of the administration. And I think Kelly has been instrumental in getting rid of a lot of the leaks and a lot of the cross messaging that was taking place.
Yeah, I think it's been running a lot smoother.
Hey, you know.
Yeah, he's done a good job.
Yeah, he's, you know, you got to look at what he had to work with. And I mean, everybody was leaking in the damn place, Gerard. Everyone was leaking there. I don't care what anyone says. I think, you know, you were like looked upon strangely if you didn't leak. But there they were, man. He got it together. It's a much more efficient operation now. And he's really made a big difference.
Yeah, well, don't forget, he was, you know, used to running a large organization, but not a country. There's quite a bit of difference between running the White House and running, you know, a series of properties, enterprises around the world. And, you know, there's bit of on-the-job training, but he certainly had the skills to be a leader, and he certainly demonstrated that in the campaign, and he certainly is an excellent brander, and he has created a brand for himself and a stock. And a lot of people are following him, and the country's starting to fall in place. And by the way, one thing I'll mention about the tax bill, which I have mentioned and I've heard others pick up on, I don't know if they thought of it themselves or just went on TV and said it, and that is the fact that I think the tax bill was a true tipping point. You know, I like the Tipping Point book when I read it when it came out a long time ago, but I think it's a tipping point because I think the congressional leaders may see the fact that there's a benefit in working with Trump as opposed to always opposing him, which is kind of the way they started out. And that may make a huge difference in 2018.
Totally agree with you. In fact, I wrote an article because I can't write a book, but basically get ready for the next tax cut, the next round, because
the
economy is going up. It's exactly what Reagan did. But I think that this tax cut, the next one, will be even more consequential for the simple reason that there was, you know, I liken it. They always say getting legislation passed in Washington is like making sausage, right? I think it's more like taking the whole extended family out to dinner and trying to get them to agree on a restaurant and what they want. Like, you know, the real greedy in-laws, the schnorrers, as they'd be called in Yiddish, they're looking for lobster, right? And, you know, the other ones want pizza. The kids want pizza. And the other ones, some of them want Mexican and Chinese. So take them to a buffet and you get off for $9.95. And that's what this tax bill is like. It's a buffet of some very unappetizing items with a few really good items thrown in the mix. And
that's a
somehow
good analogy.
It works.
Yeah. That's a good analogy.
Yeah. So we're going to see tax cut number two, where that really results in meaningful tax cuts for individuals. And we're going to see some other rationalizing of the tax code to really reform it, which that we didn't see here. Let's face it. There's a lot of rules in there that make it more difficult. Yes, for anybody making less than 50K, they can use a 1040 easy postcard instead of a form. So they just have to throw a stamp on it. And yeah, wonderful. But there's more. My point is more work to be done. But this tax cut was passed by Trump, specifically with that additional work to be done in mind. And part two is going to be a higher end buffet. If this buffet, if we liken it to casinos in Las Vegas, if this was the circus buffet, the next buffet will be the Bellagio.
Right. And we even got a little down payment on Obamacare repeal, too.
And that is consequential because that is a real freedom booster, right?
Yes. And we got the individual mandate tax penalty eliminated. We also, just one other thing, too, I'll throw in. We got the exploration privileges in ANWR,
yes,
which is going to have the effect of bringing about another $1 billion of oil revenue, tax revenues into the government, as well as a lot of jobs all up and down the supply chain for energy exploration down to the gas pump, so to speak.
Well, that was a tribute to Linda Murkowski to get her vote from Alaska, senator from Alaska. Whatever it takes, sometimes, you know, you want to make an omelet, you got to break some eggs, as long as it doesn't do more harm than good, and you wind up accomplishing your goal, then who can really argue with it, Gerard?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's another plus right there, ANWR.
Yeah. All right, Gerard, we got to go. Just tell us where we find you.
Well, they can find any of my books on Amazon, and they can find lots of stuff on my website. I think I have about 100 web pages.
Oh, yeah.
It's greatnewsforamerica.com, greatnewsforamerica.com. The new book coming out in early 2018 is going to be more Great News for America.
All right, excellent. And find us financialsurvivalnetwork.com, Twitter feeds at Kerry Lutz, email address kl@kerrylutz.com, and the Facebook page Financial Survival Network. Gerard, we'll talk to you again real soon.
I look forward to it. You have a great new year.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.